Welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McClower. And tonight's show, I thought we would cover the metaphysics of natural disasters. Now, I've had shows on this before. As a matter of fact, the last one, I don't know if it was the last one, but one of the ones was the terrible tsunami that happened in the Indian Ocean. I think that was Christmas. Was it Christmas Day? A number of years ago. It wasn't on this particular station because I was on another station. But still, I did do that show, and there was a lot of interest in the concepts that I threw out. And I thought tonight would be a good time to talk about it. Haiti is sort of almost like a close neighbor in some respects. Now, the Haitians have not always been as welcome in our country as some other nearby countries. I mean, for whatever reason you want to believe that's the case, I think possibly because they're poor, but there could certainly be issues involved in our past as a country in terms of racial factors. But I do believe also that their French connection may have distanced them to some extent to us in comparison to some other countries that were more in the British line, we'll say, of having come from. But I also think that it is important for us to recognize that all countries, I'm going to be talking about things about differences between countries today, but all countries are interconnected. We live in one planet, you know. So this concept of like, oh, I'm from here or you're from there and that makes us different or something. Well, more and more, we share a common, we'll say, foundation, being part of the world, part of the planet Earth. And the differences that happen because of locality, which is what I'm going to discuss today, are secondary to the big picture. The big picture is that we're all one, and we should be concerned about that. Okay, so some people may be aware that Pat Robertson, he's a pretty famous guy, pretty well known, for the 700 Club and all that stuff. I mean, I think he does a pretty interesting show sometimes. But the point is that, you know, sometimes he comes up with these zingers. You know, he says stuff that a lot of people kind of roll their eyes and say, oh, I think he's getting a little old or something's wrong in his thinking. Because he didn't used to say things as often, at least, that seemed to be pretty challenging and strange. Well, I guess it was yesterday, or maybe it was this morning. I don't know when it was. He suggested, or maybe did more than suggest, that the poor Haitian people a couple hundred years ago made a deal with the devil, and the deal with the devil was if they could get rid of the French off their backs because they were being governed by the French. They would then enjoy some sovereignty, but at the same time have bad things occasionally happen to them. I don't buy that. And I'm going to explain the metaphysics of natural disasters so that it's not going to fit with what he said. But oddly, some people might think that it does, but it really doesn't. And I just want to make sure that people understand where I'm coming from. Now, I don't think that he necessarily is 100% wrong. I mean, there's a grain in there, because that's why there's some a little bit of overlap with the metaphysics of natural disasters and with some religious fanatical ideas that might pop up. And I consider what he's suggesting as a kind of fanaticism of religion. Because it gives the concept that that there's retribution coming from making deals with the dark side. And the fact of the matter is that, and this is going to sound a little strange, but when we make deals, so to speak, with evil and become evil ourselves, for pretty long time, periods of time, we may not notice any negative issues. I say we, it isn't me for sure, but I mean, I'm talking about those human beings who choose to do that. And so, in an odd way, it's very much not true. The more evil you are, it may take a long time for it to come, become apparent that that wasn't a good deal. A lot of people say, well, what about all those stories? And what about Hitler? He didn't last that long, you know. Well, you know, I would agree with that to some level. But there's a lot of people that get away with a lot of stuff for an entire physical lifetime. It may not pay for it for many lifetimes afterwards. It depends on the circumstances. So let me define what I'm talking about in terms of natural disasters. A natural disaster is not natural. It's the most unnatural thing. It's a release of energy that is forceful towards the health, wealth, and welfare of living things, and oftentimes, in some situations, humans. And that's what most people call natural disasters. But they're not natural in the sense that this is the way things are supposed to be. Okay, so there is a causative nature. It isn't random. And that's the difference between what I think and what maybe some, we'll say, scientists of more conventional nature might think. They would say, well, it's just a random thing. You know, there's a kind of a cycle for a lot of different things. And if there's an earthquake, it's because the tectonic plate is moving at a certain rate and there's a certain amount of pressure being built up along a certain ridge along where the plate is moving down into the ocean and coming out on the other side, and sort of all this is happening, so you could pretty much expect that in some places you're going to have this occur. Well, that's very interesting. If it were true, if it were really true, then it would be predictable. And guess what? Earthquakes are not predictable. Hurricanes are not really predictable. And for that matter, most natural disasters, most, are not predictable. So you have a really interesting issue if you want to say that there's some correlation between events and the predictability. But unfortunately, there isn't. Now, a lot of people say, well, we just don't have enough knowledge, our computers aren't powerful enough, you know, you can go on and on. Well, maybe. But I think after tonight's show, you might disagree or agree, depending upon the situation, with the normal science, because I think that I'm going to punch some holes in all that. Also, we get to go a little longer this evening, so I'll also extend the time before we break. And we're going to get to be able to go about another 15 minutes past the hour, which is nice, simply because there isn't anybody on that side. And our show just happens to be before this end of the time in the evening. And so we're going to get to go a little longer gratis, coming from this particular station, bbsradio.com. And so, thank you very much. Okay, so let's talk about, first of all, I want to go a little bit more into Pat's idea. Okay, you made a deal with the devil, and now the devil's coming back and killing people, 100,000, 200,000 at a time. If you were to believe that, and some people, I assume that there are some listeners to the show. I mean, we've got a lot of listeners, really. There's a fairly good number. So there's some of you who might say, well, you know, I'm pretty religious, and I think that he's been around a long time, and if he says it, I'm gonna believe it. Well, I want you to consider this and think about this in terms of the devil, God, and everything else. The principle here would be that in some way, even if there was a devil that was trying to do this, now I believe in evil, but the devil per se as a personified instrument in terms of making deals with people, that's a little hard to fathom. And I'll explain to you why. What do you get out of it? You see, the interesting thing about this is that natural disasters, and for those of you who heard my show years ago, you know I already said this, actually produce good effects in the long run. They bring about a cleansing of sorts and a goodwill on the part of many of us. Now, I'm not saying it's a good thing that 100,000 or even one person dying is a good thing. No. Life is precious. Every second we can remain in the physical dimension, we're going to go on living elsewhere, but for every second we go on living in the physical dimension, we have an opportunity to create more of our creator here in a co-creation process and make it a more virtuous world, which is what we came here for. So that's a great thing. So this is an opportunity for all of us to collectively help at the present moment the Haitians to overcome this terrible plight that they have been put into, and to save some lives and to help them, and for us to recognize that they exist not too far away from those of you who are listening in the United States, not too far from us. And we have a camaraderie. Even if they were on the other side of the world, this would be true. But I think it's even more incumbent because of their relative closeness to us. And it is also true that they're the, I believe this to be true, they're the poorest country in this hemisphere. They have a tattered society. They've almost gone down a couple times in recent decades politically, and they just hang on. They just hang on, and they have gangs, and they have kind of a illegal system of economy more than a legal one. If you have something, is likely to be taken away from you violently as you are to keep it. I mean, it's a terrible place in that respect. And the people born there have some difficult karma to deal with. And I want you to think about that. Now, should we be concerned? I mean, you could be callous and say, well, heck, they've got difficult karma because they did something to deserve it. So why should I worry about it? Well, because we all share in that karma. It doesn't. There's no such thing as just only individual karma. Individual karma has a small part to play on from an individual to group karma and national and finally world karma. I mean, so eventually it does touch all of us. And when 1 million to 2 million people or more are caught in some very significant negative karma, being objectively terribly poor, having a whole myriad of really serious diseases, and incredible crime and corruption and, just a terrible society, that plays on all of us. That affects all of us. We all should be concerned about that anywhere in the world, especially if it's at our back door. Now, I'm saying it in a kind of a, self-interest way, because obviously we should be self-interested if it's nearby, but it should be extra interested, and we should be interested because they're just human beings. And we've all made mistakes. We've all have karma to deal with. So it is important to recognize that their level of karma, why maybe somewhat worse than the average of some other people, it doesn't matter. We all have got it, Maybe in this lifetime we're not even dealing with as much as they've chosen to deal with as souls. They may not have any worse karma than us. They've just chosen to deal with certain kinds and amounts in a certain way in this lifetime. So don't look at a person's conditions and say, they deserve it. which is the kind of Pat Robertson thing. I mean, they don't deserve it as much as they may have semi-caused it. Now, let me get into that. Okay, what's the metaphysics of this whole situation? Because if it isn't random, and I think I'm gonna prove that tonight, at least to some people. And if it isn't some kind of retribution coming because you made a deal with the devil 200 years ago. By the way, that's just folklore in Haiti. I'm surprised that Pat doesn't know that. It's not like nobody's got any, testimonials that really happened. It's just folklore, and whether it's true or not, which is probably not, obviously. It doesn't make any sense anyway. I mean, if someone did make a pact with the devil, maybe 1,000 people did, it still wouldn't make any significant effect on things. Okay, let's talk about the metaphysics. The metaphysics are this. Most of you know what this concept is. Energy follows thought greater than its own. Now, what is the thought of energy? Well, if it's kind of random forceful energy, which I call it, kind of an elemental form of energy rather than a demonic. Demonic is kind of like energy that really has some thought involved in it. Whereas this elemental form of energy is really just like gravity. It's just think of how gravity is the basic form of it. And it's just that it wants to be more of itself. It just wants to have more of the force that it imposes on everything else around it because it likes it. And it likes to be denser and denser and more together through what we call gravitational forces. And so, and it also tends to not be other-directed. It's directed only towards itself. We would call it dark. Now, I'm not talking about dark energy in the astronomical sense. I'm talking about it in terms of a more metaphysical. That it really lacks the enlightenment of divinic energies, which tend to try to reduce the forces between themselves and everyone else. Elemental energy tends to increase the forces. It likes force. It likes really scrunching itself together, and the bigger it gets, the more it is happy. Okay, so that's elemental energy. And elemental energy responds to dark thought. It literally does. And what happens when a group of a million or 2 million people start thinking pretty much in a very selfish and particularly dark way? Dark would include destructive to life, etc. Well, if it's done enough consistently and for a long time, I'm talking about years, not days or something like that, it tends to attract forces in nature. What are the forces that we are familiar with? Well, it includes everything from the havoc of wind and ocean and waves to the most tremendous ones that are closest to us, that are most dense, which is the inside of the Earth. And you might say, well, you mean the inside of the Earth? Well, we're on the outside of the Earth. We're on the crust, That's where it isn't very deep, and it's not very... we'll say, not very much of a effector of force. You got to go beyond the crust, because beyond the crust, deeper into the Earth is in movement. And the movement is either nice and copacetic and working in a more devonic or enlightened way, it starts developing eddies and weird movements that are not consistent with cooperative elements of other parts of energy. And that's what happens. When we experience earthquakes in a very specific location, because there's thousands of earthquakes every year, tens of thousands, but when they hit in strength near a population center, they are very disastrous, deadly. And they come from the normal movement of the Earth in subduction, which means that it's going that top part of the oceans are in movement. The top part of the base of the ocean is in movement, and this more liquid part of the Earth, which is below the crust, is moving at a different rate. And so you get a slippage factor and a sudden movement factor that creates earthquakes. But the earthquakes would be relatively minor and would not be necessarily directed as much towards population centers on an average if you didn't have people, unfortunately, creating darkness in their thinking and a mass scale. And that then leads to more, we'll say, sudden and chaotic, in a sense, in which you have a discharge of energy that isn't smooth in a little bit at a time, but suddenly chaotic and very violent, where we call them disastrous earthquakes. If you're talking about the Richter scale, probably something beyond 4.5 to 5. When earthquakes get over that and they're near a population center, they start becoming quite destructive. Amazingly, earthquakes in the 3 to 4 range are barely noticeable. They almost never do much harm. And it's possible, as we gain a better metaphysical understanding of the world around us, we will realize that we actually have control over these violent earthquakes and volcanoes and other things. And we could reduce them around population centers by changing ourselves and making our thought to be more enlightened. You might say, oh, that sounds like crazy. Well, how about we do an experiment? I don't know. It would be difficult, but let's get 1 million people or so. We got to have large numbers, remember, because our thought's way too small on an individual level to have much effect on anything. Somewhat in contradiction to transcendental meditation, TM, people who think, you know, well, I could change anything, I can do it. Or some people just think, you know, positive thinking will change your life. You really have to have a lot stronger thought than what an average human being has. Now, people or beings in the next kingdom actually have thought thousands of times greater than a human being, in some cases millions. And they alone can therefore have an effect, as though there's 1 million people. But that's a different thing. Those are beings who are super beings. They're outside of the human kingdom. So they don't count in what I'm talking about. Now, if we could get ourselves together, and I'm talking about 1 million plus, maybe a couple, and we could really live in a very enlightened and virtuous way, and we could put ourselves in some of the worst earthquake zones, and what would happen would be there would be a change. How would it change? Well, the change would go something like this. You would have more frequent earthquakes, but of a very low intensity. You would even be able to count on them. You know, it's like, oh, today's the third Wednesday in blank blank, and it's going to be an earthquake today, sometime around noon to 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it'll be about an intensity 3, which means that we can all go outside and kind of feel a little jiggle and stuff, but nothing much is going to happen. If you have a glass of water right on the edge of the table, it might fall off. That's about the extent of the damage you could expect from this. And, you know, this is the sort of thing that it is possible for humans to change and produce. Now, I would love to prove this, but, I mean, we've got to get the people together with the right consciousness to be able to do this, and I don't know if we're going to be able to do that at this time in Earth's history. We'll see. Maybe someday. Okay, so it's actually, and what I'm telling you, I'm not kidding about. In other words, this is not like, oh, well, he's just conjecturing. No, I thoroughly, completely believe this, and beyond believe it, I can talk about it in terms of not just metaphysics, but physics. But I don't want to get into that tonight. There's actually a part of quantum physics that supports what I'm saying, but I don't want to really try to explain it in that way. That would be boring and not any more convincing than what I'm already telling you, other than for a few of our listeners who are really into that, they might say, oh, now I can believe him because he's talking in my lingo. Okay, yeah. Okay, but I'm not going to do that tonight. All right, so here we go. So we've got some places on Earth, like Haiti, like, well, there's some parts of China that are always kind of screwball. But because it's a big country and it's being led by a very dark government, the people aren't necessarily any darker than they are anyplace else, but the government's terrible. Okay, so here's the situation. We have places on Earth that are definitely more prone to having occurrences of what we'll call natural disasters. Be aware that there is a relationship, as long as you have a lot of people, between the consciousness of the people and the frequency and, most importantly, the severity of the disasters. Okay? So that's what we're really talking about. And if we want to make any kind of change, we first have to become aware of the relationship. Now you can say, okay, why? What is going on then? Can you be a little more specific? Yes, I can. When you have a lot of people thinking similarly in a dark way, it's much worse than if not. And why do people think in a similar way? Because there is actually areas of the earth that are more conducive to certain types of thinking that affect certain types of ray energies. I'm getting a little bit deep here, so I'll take it slow. But it will make more sense if I can explain this. I'm going to use some examples because this is too complicated to talk about it in terms of just concepts. Let's talk about, let's talk about California. It's an interesting place, not too far from where I am, although I'm in the state next door, but the people who are running this show are actually in California. So maybe they'll be interested in this. Okay, so California. What's the deal with California? Let's talk about what kind of state it is in terms of energy. California is really focused along the fourth type of ray energy. You can say, "Well, that's kind of interesting. I didn't know that. I mean, has it always been that way?" Well, for humans create this condition. It may not have been that way a million years ago, but it is today. A collection of human minds thinking mostly that way, and it builds up. You get more and more people who think towards in that direction. You get more people attracted to it, see. So it kind of builds on itself. And so people who are on this fourth type of thinking, that means they use their sacral center a lot. And they have a certain attitude about life, and they have a certain way of representing themselves. Now, the cities in California also have a major effect. And Los Angeles is a second ray type of city, but that's sympathetic to the fourth ray. Where, interestingly, San Francisco is a fifth-ray type of energy city, and it's kind of different from the state in an odd way. So there's a little bit more differences between, I guess you would say, the people in the Bay Area and those in L.A., a considerable difference, actually. And they themselves say so I guess they already have noticed that. And those people who live in Marin County in general are, you know, that's a county that has a certain, bent towards itself in terms of ray focus. Okay, so what does all this mean? Well, if you get a lot of people together that have a certain type of ray focus, they invite more types of events of ray-focused energies and how those energies express themselves than others. Oh. So you can also, not only are you basically inviting certain disasters if you're selfish, or inviting disasters in general if you're selfish, but if you have a certain ray focus, it's going to actually affect certain kinds of natural disasters. Again, I call natural disasters really unnatural disasters. But so that's even more interesting, I find it is anyway, because it's going to have an effect in, come in a certain way rather than in another way. Now, what does the fourth ray, as we talk about the whole state of California, do? Well, the fourth ray has a schism, we'll call it. Schism. And it's kind of interesting because you have the San Andreas Fault of the whole state. It's like, oh, it's a fourth ray fault. Okay, it kind of is. Let me explain. The schism is that, in general, the fourth ray has a conflict between spirit and energy when it is represented in a selfish thinking way. When it's not, it does the opposite. It brings spirit and energy together in a way that represents the Creator. So it's a wonderful thing, I mean, on the good side. But on the bad side, on the side that is not towards God, and it creates natural disasters, it produces a schism. And the schism is relatively severe compared to other schisms in all the other rays. So you have a pretty significant schism. So you might say, well, then how did this all start then? Well, original people, inhabitants in California, at least in the last couple thousand years, are Native Americans, right? They didn't necessarily have the same thinking apparatus. So very few of them succumbed to any harm from the natural disasters, which may have occurred in California on occasion. That's my opinion. The interesting thing about this is, and I'm suggesting this with, we don't have proof of what I just said, but the interesting thing about this is that now we have great cities. We have some of the highest density of population centers in the United States. And we have this sudden and sometimes severe earthquakes. But they also have little ones. The little ones are good. Remember, that releases energy, and it actually forestalls any big ones. So it's good to have little ones. But when you have a schism based upon the fourth ray, you oftentimes have sudden and severe earthquakes. And I'll tell you something else that's kind of interesting. If you have a fifth ray connection with a schism, then you can end up with volcanoes. Yeah. Let's look at an example of that. One of the fifth ray places that is kind of interesting is the Seattle area in the state of Washington. And the whole state actually is a fifth ray. And so what you have is a much greater likelihood there of volcanoes. Now, volcanoes are associated with earthquakes, but the natural disaster usually doesn't come from the earthquake so much in those areas as it does from the volcano. You see the difference? So you can have earthquakes, but seldom do they cause very much damage in a fifth ray focused area. But the volcanoes that are associated with them, watch out. Those are nasty and very dangerous. So now we see that there's some correlation between a natural disaster and the ray type of thought that is connected with the location where the disaster is likely to occur. Wow. Tell me that isn't freaky. And I mentioned the tsunami back in 2004. That tsunami, most of you know, took place on the floor of the Indian Ocean. And it went sort of island hopping. It went all over, and eventually it hits the islands and some coastal areas. That was along the sixth ray. And the sixth ray does affect water in big ways and all kinds of stuff like that. Now, true, it's an earthquake on the floor of the ocean, but the earthquake itself is not the destructive element. It's the waves produced by the earthquake that become so dangerous. The nature of those waves, too. They aren't just any old wave. They have a very specific kind of nature to them, and they're very dangerous. Wow. I find this fascinating. I hope I'm not boring you with this stuff, but I find this fascinating because it really is an eye-opener if you have a clear understanding of this. I'm not going to have a chance tonight to go through all of the different rays and all the different kind of disasters, because there's actually several different kinds that are associated with each ray. But nonetheless, like a third ray, place will bring about wind issues, really strong problems with wind and factors like that. So be aware of that as well in some circumstances. Wind is a definite factor. And if you have a third and sixth ray factor like you do in Florida, then you have hurricanes. And you might say, well, oh, come on, you're just making that up. No, I'm not. I'm not. I mean, I actually have a map that I did many, many years ago that describes the states and what the focus of each state is. And if you compare it to the natural disasters, you'll see the correlation. It's very fascinating. Okay, so and then you say, well, what about the Madras Fault in the middle of the country? Yeah, the fourth ray again. Tennessee, parts of Missouri, also have some connection to that. Missouri is actually a second ray, but the fault itself connects into parts of the Tennessee Valley and other places. So yeah, it's because it's really the Midwest. Most people don't know this. They call it the New Madras because it goes to the town of Missouri, but it really is connected for a couple hundred miles, going north and south through the middle of the United States. It's kind of like one part of the United States is moving at one rate, and another part's moving at another rate, and it creates a crunch in the middle. But anyway, it's another issue. But it does affect some fourth ray states in that area. Very, very fascinating. I'm just amazed at how these things correlate seemingly so well. Okay. We're going to go to break here in about a minute. I just want you to think about what this all means, because there is a significant element now to this process. And how can we learn from this? What can we do to change it? Because after all, if a million people are all going to be thinking selfishly, can we do anything about that if we don't live there? And I'll go into that with other points. And that's the reason I don't have time to go into all the other nitty-gritties about this in today's show, because I want to cover the other, you know, like, I always like to say, what can we do about it kind of thing. So we'll do that when we come back in about 2 minutes, 10 seconds or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of. About romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm the host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about the metaphysics of natural disasters. We have the luxury of going a quarter past the hour, so we're going to really have a more in-depth show tonight, thanks to the generosity of the radio station. So that's great. I love that. And at any rate, I thought it would be good to know, and by the way, if you want to call in, of course, there's numbers on the screen you can call in. If you have questions or make some comments, whatever, that's all right. Fine. I thought during the second part of this show, instead of just keeping talk, I mean, I could talk for hours about the intricacies of the metaphysics and explain how everything, you know, but that isn't exactly what I wanted to do. What I wanted to give a basic understanding, and then I want to talk about really what does this mean in terms of how we live and what can we do to change the effects, not just on ourselves. I mean, great, maybe we could get 1 million people together and we all could be comfortable someplace on this in this world. But more so to the point, how do we make it better for everybody else? And what is the real meaning behind all of this in terms of God and natural disasters and everything else that we've talked about so far? Because there is a bigger picture to this. So let me go into that, the bigger picture, we'll call it. A natural disaster is a consequence, you could call it karma, of causes set in motion by human beings. Natural disasters become much greater when the human activities match the human thought, and both are dark. So just because a lot of people think in a dark way, if their thought is not actualized in an interactive way between themselves and potentially other places as well, then the results are not necessarily any significant increase in natural disasters. There may be some, but it's relatively small. But if there is a connection to actual action, people taking action, then we've got a real issue. And that's when you get into much more severe kinds of natural disasters taking place. So it's kind of like, and I started off with this idea of energy following thought, and that's absolutely true. But it also means that if the thought results in further action by the people who are doing the thinking, you're going to have a multiplying effect, vastly so, that's going to tremendously affect the outcome. So I'm going to take the poor Haitians as an example again. If their society was just a bunch of people who were kind of selfish or very selfish in their thinking and didn't care about others, etc., but you didn't have roving bands of of gangs doing destructive things, and you didn't have governments that sometimes weren't fully, you know, working for the people, and you didn't have people being greedy and selfish about some elements of the material existence they were in, because they're living pretty, you know, pretty poor, very poor. Or if you didn't have some of them maybe trying to get out of there and doing some crazy things. But, you know, all that going on has produced in a kind of a well to suck in some kind of a forceful event from the outside, because events, actions taken, cause reactions to occur more than just thought. The thought thing is very important because that's what it starts with. But you got to eventually, in most circumstances, go beyond thought to really have a natural disaster of any significant proportion. And that's where it really makes a difference. Okay, well, now we got another piece of the puzzle, right? That the other piece is that, wow, if you take actions that are negative, you're going to create a lot worse in terms of natural disasters. That's always a scary thing. Now I'm going to tell you something else. What mitigates this is that if some of the time some people are taking very negative actions, but others are taking very positive, they can kind of cancel each other out so that you don't have the number of natural disasters that you might normally consider would happen, because a lot of people are thinking selfishly, but some people are actually not acting selfishly. Wow. So there is something to be said about doing good deeds, even if it's a minority. If that minority of people do exceptionally good things, and the majority are doing pretty bad things, but not the worst of the bad things, then you're going to have an offset. And the results could be a, we'll say, avoidance of a natural disaster. Let me also mention something, and you probably, if you've been listening to the shows for years, you know this to be true, or that at least I said it, and that is that members of the next kingdom and beyond that can intervene with their thoughts and even their actions to not prevent a natural disaster as much as modify it by moving the epicenter to another place that's not as close, by reducing some severity, by spreading out over time the total amount of energy so that it isn't as forceful in a shorter period of time, which is also much more dangerous. And so they could do these things, but they can't do them in a way that that completely gets rid of the energy. And they have to be careful, because if they do it once and it prevents a natural disaster, if the rest of the world doesn't respond to what was the remaining disaster in a way that's very positive, and particularly the people in the area don't respond in a way that's very positive, a much worse disaster is going to loom and eventually attack that area. So the danger is, what kind of response is going to take place? And as an example, right now in Haiti, some people are saying, well, they could end up having riots, and then the gangs are coming out. Now they're going to start taking, you know, all the supplies we're giving them, and the government will probably squander the money and do. Well, okay, if all that were to happen, then maybe in a couple more years they could have a 8.5 instead of a 7.0 or whatever earthquake or some other natural disaster. But it would most likely be similar to the last one, but worse, and it will do much more in terms of destruction, if that's how they respond. But particularly, it will be aggravated, let's say, if the spiritual hierarchy, for those of you who know what that means, members of the next kingdom and beyond, were to have moved the epicenter from, you know, one of the main cities to way offshore, 100 or 200 miles. They actually could do this. But then, let's say they still have all the, they have some destruction, and then they have all this selfish actions taken part by their citizens, and maybe the rest of the world doesn't respond very humanely either, then you could have a really terrible earthquake maybe a few years hence. So you see, you got to be really careful if you're one of these super beings who is capable of actually making a difference in a, you know, more singular way, or at least as a small group, because the outcome could be even further of greater disaster, depending upon whether or not these people actually deserve what you're doing, and the results could be even much worse. So a lot of great, we'll say, wisdom is needed, and judgment about when to intervene, because intervention may be the opposite in its effect than what people think. I hope I'm not losing you on this. It's a little complicated, I know, to follow these concepts because, you know, they have these kind of unusual twists to them. But nonetheless, I thought it's important, if we're going to be talking about the metaphysics of natural disasters, that you guys, all of you out there, have a better understanding of how come these things are happening, and why, if there's so much goodness in the next kingdom and beyond, why don't they just stop this stuff? Well, because if they do, it might end the planet. I mean, if every natural disaster were suddenly intervened and prevented in short order, the Earth may completely be destroyed by a disaster, which would not be in the benefit of anybody. So, you see, that's what you got to be careful about. Okay, so what can we do, knowing all these things that I'm telling you, because it's so complicated? What if we screw it up? I mean, it's a terrible thing. Well, one of the things is that's really interesting is that the people, like those who have not been in the disaster, those people can pay attention to and make a difference by giving as much as they can in an intelligent way and in a wise way to those who have been harmed by the disaster. This alleviates the chances of the next disaster being as severe. It also reduces, now listen to this very carefully, it also reduces the likelihood that a disaster will occur not only in the original place the disaster took place, but in the places where the people who are giving did so. So let me give you an example. I know this is getting complicated. Let's say the people in California decide when there's a big hurricane in Florida, it's on the other side of the country, for those who live in the United States, and they go off and they try to do everything they can to help the people in Florida. I would use Katrina and Louisiana, but I don't think we did too good there. So I think that has really encouraged problems to occur all over the place. But that's another story. Okay, so let's say they did a wonderful job, the Californians did. Not only is it likely there will be a reduction in the number of bad hurricanes, say, hitting Florida in the near future, but amazingly, there will be less bad earthquakes in California. How's that for a double whammy? And there's a tremendous benefit, therefore, because we're all connected, you see. This is what I was trying to say at the beginning of the show. So you can't just isolate this. As a matter of fact, the more you do, the more you are not conscious. Consciousness is inclusiveness. It's the ability to connect the dots. If you can't connect things, you're not really being conscious. So this is what's taking place then. We can make a difference to all the people in the world by our attention to giving in wise ways. Now, what does wise ways mean in comparison to unwise? Well, I'm going to use Haiti. Again, this is a good show today because of what's happened. I mean, it's Haiti again. What's a wise way to give to these people? The wise way to give to these people is they need structure. They need protection. they need medical and food and basic services, etc. But it has to be couched within the darkness of their country. If you don't see the darkness of the people that you're trying to give to, you will give in the wrong ways, and you'll create a bigger mess. Let me give you an example. Let's say we send $1 billion to Haiti. We've sent $100 million, or committed to, at least. I don't know what we're really going to send. $1 billion to Haiti, and we're going to give it to them in over 30 days, which is fast, believe me. And this is a country that $1 billion goes a real long way. And we're going, let's say we decided to do it in an unwise way, so we call up their president and we say, "Well, we'll tell you what, we're going to give it to you and a few other politicians, and we hope you use the money wisely." And the next thing you know, the president's got a nice big yacht. I'm not saying he's crooked, by the way, but there are some people in the government that were. And a lot of them were killed in this earthquake, by the way, which is another thing we'll get to in a few minutes. Okay, so they don't have the structure to use the money wisely. Giving the money would be one of the most foolish things to do. The money isn't going to really be helpful. As a matter of fact, I don't know that I would give people who have a lack of structure and a large amount of greed and selfishness and marauding gangs of traffic, drug traffickers and others, it's crazy to give them money, because that's going to feed all the darkness in their society. What do you give them instead? Well, you send over a small army of people. People in various stations of life with high security. Force is needed in these situations to prevent this from being abused. And then you provide the services more directly. We're doing a little bit of this. I'm not saying we're doing the greatest job on it, by the way. But I wouldn't give money, because money is a universal amount of time and energy that they could apply to anything, including very bad things. Okay, what else would I give them? Well, one of the things I would give them in a longer-term approach to the problem is education. When you have a population that is basically uneducated, okay, only half the population there can read anything. That's not too good. Literacy is a very big issue. And when you have drugs involved, and they have a very, very high crime rate in terms of drug sales, the productions, you name it, they got everything going on there. Methamphetamines, a producer, all kinds of things. Okay, if you've got that going on, you want to educate people about what's wrong with that kind of living, those kinds of actions. You also want to give people the ability to do something different. If a person is faced with starvation or selling drugs, guess what? They're going to go sell drugs. But if you give them the skills and the ability to generate a virtuous life that is contributing to others, then, amazingly, some of those aberrant ways of life diminish rapidly. Because people really don't want to live that way on an average. Most of them don't. Now, there's some really no good nicks that are still going to be the drug people. But that's why you also send over military or policing force. You don't just say, "Oh, gee, we don't have to worry about it. We're gonna send $1 billion worth of food and medical supplies and other types of materials, clothing, etc., and nobody's gonna go and interfere with us or take it from us." No, this is the opposite. You've got to guard it. You've got to make sure that the people who get it don't have it taken from them. You're gonna have to directly intervene if you're really going to make a difference. Now, you could say, "Yeah, but I thought we're not supposed to be nation building and all that stuff." We are all one. If you look at it from a separate nation standpoint, you can't see the wisdom to correct the problem. And then you will become the problem instead of solving the problem. You have to look at it from a completely different viewpoint than, well, they're their nations, so we can't get involved. Now, we only give it to certain countries where we know it's a wise thing to do. I mean, giving this, let me give you another example. Let's say we're going to give $1 billion or $10 billion to Somalia. What do you think is going to happen? Well, the pirates are going to have a wonderful time. They're going to say, gee, now that the United States is giving us the money directly, we don't have to go and steal any boats. The ships out there, we can leave alone. It's a lot of work getting out there, and it's sometimes dangerous. If the United States is just going to give us the money, we can just use it for our own pleasure, and we'll have our own ships. You know, maybe we'll start our own armada. Who knows? So we can get bigger guns. You see, that's the problem. You can't deal with it from that standpoint. Any time you give money to a corrupt source, a government particularly, in Africa, this is particularly true, by the way, all you're doing is you're further enslaving the population. You have to do things that allows other people to grow and be free and to become more conscious. If you don't direct your giving in those ways, you are the problem. You're not the solution. We are doing this all over the place, all the time, as a country. And many other countries are doing the same. We all feel great, great sadness and a yearning to be of some help. And we think that the best way to do it is just give it to the people in power. You know, like, that's a good thing. Yeah. Governments are corrupt. The government we have in this country is corrupt. We can't trust that we're going to give money to a government and they're going to do much good with it. All we're helping is the banks in Switzerland, believe me, and a few other countries, NASA, wherever they have banking that is kind of hidden, because that's where our money ends up, Swiss bank accounts, stuff like that, or in yachts, or airplanes, or big palaces. This is the problem that we have to face. So if you're going to give, you have to give wisely. We have to learn this from our big brothers, human ancestors, in the next kingdoms, and recognize that we are trying to emulate them, and we have to start becoming wiser so that we resolve some of the natural disasters in the world, including the ones that affect us as well as others, by being wiser in the way that we give. Now, this was a terrible, and I said I was going to bring up Katrina, this was a terrible result in terms of Louisiana and Katrina. We did all the wrong things. Went down there with Visa cards and gave people $1,500, $2,000, $2,500 on the Visa card and said, well, this should take care of your expenses. You know, oh, great. That's fantastic. That's going to solve everybody's problem. Just give them a Visa card. I mean, you know, there was a big hurricane. That should solve their problem. Craziness. And take their guns away. Because after all, they shouldn't be having to protect themselves, right? Even though we're not going to protect them. There's no police anywhere to be found. There's no protecting forces, right? But we'll take their guns away from them. That makes sense, because people with guns are dangerous. So we make some awful mistakes. And those mistakes have led, strangely, to an increase in natural disasters. Well, if you follow everything I've said in this show so far, I hope you're following it, because there's a lot of, again, it's connecting the dots. The reason, some people ask me, why do you do such complicated shows? Just make it simple. Say three things, and that's it. Because this is education. I'm trying to get people to think so that they increase their consciousness, and you do that by connecting the dots, which is hard to do. So the shows are hard. I understand that. Yeah, of course, we've covered a lot of ground so far. But I hope it's making some sense. Okay. So the poor people in Louisiana that had two-thirds of their city destroyed, New Orleans is a prime example of the very nature of what I'm talking about. You had some people with some darkness and selfishness. You had a pretty corrupt city government, and the state government, by the way, isn't that much better. That doesn't mean it's the most corrupt place in the world or anything like that, because the whole country is corrupt, and Washington D.C. is believe me, if there's a natural or a man-made natural disaster, if you want to call that a terrorist attack, Washington D.C. do not be surprised. Because what they're doing there right today, as I speak, is bad news. Okay, so that's another show. Let's talk about Katrina and what happened in Louisiana. It wasn't just Louisiana. It happened in Mississippi as well, but they responded differently. The Mississippians, and I'm going to, and this is unfortunate, I have to compare these two, and other people in the, you know, along that whole coastal line, responded differently by literally being somewhat more helpful to each other, and their local governments were more responsive in general. And the way the U.S. government responded to them was wiser, because I think of racial issues and other factors that are negatively interpreted by the U.S. government towards Louisiana. Unfortunately, New Orleans was badly treated, and the people living there were. And they still are. I mean, how many years has it been? And they still are. And goofy things were done. I mean, incredibly stupid mistakes were made. Instead of going in with literally enough money to rebuild all the homes that were destroyed, rebuild all the infrastructure that was destroyed, and somewhat correct the engineering problem created by the Army Corps of Engineers, because they only went to a level 3 hurricane, and there are now level 5 and even possibly 6 hurricanes. You better build bigger and better dikes and levees, etc., or else you're going to have a more serious problem. But they didn't do that. They still haven't, by the way. So ultimately, we have not dealt with the problem correctly. Instead of doing that, what did we do? Oh, we went out and spent $100 million, way more than I think it's a couple $1 billion, on trailers. And then told the people they could only live in them for a year and then figure something else out for them. I don't know what the story was. But we really didn't go in and really build our houses. Now you could say, well, isn't that, I mean, now they may have had a lousy house and you're going to rebuild and be a better house just because there was a natural disaster. Well, okay. Maybe you get them to share in some way. They have a small mortgage that maybe they could pay. I don't know. There's some kind of equity that could be equitable situation that could be determined based upon each person's need and what true disaster they suffered from the whole thing. But the point is, we did nothing like that. We did so little that most of the actual benefit came from not our government, but from some private companies and charities. If it wasn't for them, I don't know if there would be a New Orleans today. And so here you have an incredible circumstance, and I'm saying this, it's truly incredible, in which our government basically totally screwed it up and they never got it right. I mean, how many times do you have to retry to get it right and you still can't get it right? Because of consciousness, because of prejudice, because of all kinds of negative issues, this part of our country has still not been set right. And it's inviting what? Further disaster. But not necessarily in New Orleans. Not necessarily. Remember I said, watch out for Washington, D.C. Remember those words. Because it's really, this is coming from the central government. It is. Is there some participation through the state of Louisiana? Yeah, sure. But not as much as I think it is on a national scale. The good news is that on a private basis in charities, there was an immediate response, which is fairly good. But it hasn't been sustaining. And so we still have issues that are ongoing. And it's things like this that, you know, people say, well, why is this happening? Well, why don't you just look in the mirror? You know, ask yourself, how did you deal with the last 10 disasters? And then you can figure out what the next five are going to be like, because that's really what I'm telling you. I know people are finding this hard to believe. Some of you are. But I'm telling you, open your mind and your heart, and I believe you'll be able to see this, particularly if you look not in the past, but you look at where you've been and what we've done as a country in this country, because we're more familiar with this country than other countries are. But if you're outside this country, look in your own country and see how you're dealing with these things. And then, at that point, you can make some predictions and see if they happen, as I suggest, about what the future might be. In those places where very good responses are, wise ones, you can look for a more, we'll say, or less forceful outcome with much fewer natural disasters. It's just that simple. Think about the 1930s in the United States and how it is amazing that the Dust Bowl and a number of other natural disasters, as well as economic collapse and many other things, all came together. Do you think that that was really just coincidence? I don't know. You think about that. I mean, you almost have to be an expert in history to figure all of this out and how it works. I know. Well, we're running out of time. We've got about a minute here, and then I got to kind of tell you about a few things, and then we'll be gone for the week. But I would love for you to consider this. Make this something that you talk about with other people, because you can't deal with these kinds of things just as an individual. Only groups of people, and particularly large groups of people, taking, we'll say, virtuous action can make a difference about the circumstances that we're facing and the coming and looming crisis. Everybody says 2012. Well, yeah, there might be more crises in 2012. But I'm telling you, it's also the third ray going out, which is really what the 2012 is about anyway. And all these crises that we're facing are going to get considerably worse unless we do something, I mean, like right now. Because there are going to be much worse crises. Not because there's one thing or another, like global warming only or this or that. Fact of the matter is the sun right now is in solar minimis, so global warming isn't even showing itself. But if it changes, watch out. Okay, Mimi's going to be talking over at Mesa Fiesta Borders, if you happen to be in the Phoenix metropolitan area, this coming Monday, January 18th, from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. She's going to talk about the seven rays. You've heard me talk about that sometimes, and she'll be doing that but no charge, so you can come and hear her and also enter into a discussion about that subject. I think that's really neat that she's doing that. Okay, if you haven't heard, ideal self-sorption resveratrol works. It's still cheap. You can get it for $50 a bottle. ForeverYoungProducts.com. I use it. I know other people are using it. It really, really works. If you've got pets that you're concerned about, and you should be concerned about all your pets, I hope, but ideal self-sorption resveratrol VF works on animals amazing. There you can see it almost by the day. I'm not kidding you. Try a bottle and see how it works. And it isn't that much money. It's like $35 for a bottle, and it really makes a difference. And that can last literally for months on small pets, or let's say about a month on a larger pet. And if you want to know more about what's going on, you can you can go to agelesswisdom.com, or you can also contact me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. I'm around. Hey, you can reach me. And you can get Soul Balance. Soul Balance is available. It balances the energies in the etheric body, making you feel more well, and can cure all kinds of things, but nothing that is an illness, because I can't say that because the FDA will come and do bad things to me. Okay, and you can get a whole bunch of tablets and other things. For information, 602-472-5127, Life Balance Association, call them. Okay, we're out of time for right now. I hope this show has made some sense to you. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.